Sie hören eine Veranstaltung der Leipziger Buchmesse. Für die Inhalte ist die Leipziger Buchmesse nicht verantwortlich. Viel Spaß beim Hören.
Gestern sprechen Sie Deutsch, Magnus Walker. Der gestern aus Amerika gekommen ist und heute seine Deutschland-Tournee zum Erscheinen der deutschen Ausgabe seines Buches Urban Outlaw hier in Leipzig präsentiert. Wir kommen jetzt direkt aus dem Porsche-Werk, da hatten wir heute Morgen schon eine Präsentation, und freuen uns, dass Sie hier sind, etwas aus dem Leben von Magnus Walker zu hören, kennenzulernen. Ich werde versuchen, so gut wie möglich zu übersetzen. Von Magnus, die Deutschkenntnisse von Magnus Walker sind noch ausbaufähig. I just talk that your German is not so good. You can some
sprechen Sie Porsche, say. Yeah, my German is like my Spanish, and that is poquito más o menos if you guys speak Spanish. But maybe we should make this interactive, and if you speak English, just put your hand up. Let me know if anybody speaks English here. So that's a few people speak English. I'm actually just here for the Leipzig Beard Convention.
Okay.
And I happen to have a book out as well, so it's great to be here. I thank everyone for turning up, and let's get on with the show. Rock and roll.
Wonderful audience, I think. Vielleicht ein paar Worte zu Magnus Walker, der als Urban Outlaw in den vergangenen Jahren sich in der Automobilszene einen Namen gemacht, aber nicht nur das. Er hat ein unglaublich bewegtes, ein sehr buntes Leben. Und über das wollen wir reden. Über das spricht er in seinem Buch Urban Outlaw. Und um Ihnen so ein bisschen so ein Gefühl dafür zu geben, was Magnus und Porsche ausmacht, würde ich einfach mal ein paar Zeilen aus seinem Buch lesen. We did it today in the morning. I will read some words and some sentences.
Yeah, you can read the book. I've read it once. I've yet to read it in German, so I don't know if it's different in German, but I think the theme, the spirit, the passion is a universal language. As I always say, it doesn't matter whether you speak English, German, or Japanese,
or
I believe, or Spanish, poquito más o menos. I believe we actually all speak passion. I think passion is something that transcends. Yeah, well, organic and passion. I mean, for me, I'm a passionate guy, so that word will crop up quite a bit.
Ich glaube, was recht interessant ist, dass ein Mann wie Magnus Walker, der nicht so aussieht, wie Sie sich vielleicht den klassischen Porsche-Fahrer vorstellen, der aber dennoch mit dem Unternehmen, mit der Marke und mit der Faszination with Passion Porsche etwas zu tun hat. Und wie es dazu gekommen ist, das würde ich Ihnen jetzt einfach mal vorlesen wollen. Es ist schon seltsam, wie sich bestimmte Erinnerungen in deinen Kopf brennen oder besser, manche Teile bestimmter Geschichten. In verschiedenen Interviews, die ich in den vergangenen Jahren gegeben habe, sprach ich viel über den Porsche-Domino-Effekt, als ich anfing, diese Fahrzeuge zu kaufen, um sie danach umzubauen. Doch wenn ich zurückblicke, fing alles im Jahr 1977 an. Ich war 10 Jahre alt, als ich mit meinem Dad die Earl's Court Motor Show in London besuchte. Es war das erste Mal, dass ich überhaupt zu so einem Event ging. Ich bin sogar ziemlich sicher, dass ich zu diesem Zeitpunkt überhaupt erstmals in London war. Als Familie reisten wir nicht viel herum, daher war dieser Trip zu den hellen Lichtern der Stadt fast wie eine Entdeckungsreise für mich. Es war das Jahr des Punkrocks und des silbernen Thronjubiläums der Queen, was London zu einem sehr pulsierenden und unglaublich geschäftigen Ort machte. Ich erinnere mich, wie wir Sheffield verließen und einen Reisebus nach London nahmen. Dann fuhren wir vermutlich mit dem Bus oder der Bahn durch die Hauptstadt nach Earl's Court. An die Details erinnere ich mich nicht. Ich erinnere mich auch nicht genau an die Halle selbst. Später habe ich die Motorshow in jenem Jahr gegoogelt. Die Fotos, die ich im Internet fand, sind voll mit den knalligen Farben der 70er Jahre. Den blauen Teppichen, den roten Vorhängen, nicht gerade der Glanz und Glamour der heutigen Motorshows. Damals war dieser Industriezweig viel kleiner. Ich hatte mal ein mit Eselsohren übersätes Magazin, das über diese Veranstaltung berichtete und den Ferrari 308 GTB enthielt, der seinerzeit 1500 Pfund günstiger war als der Porsche Turbo für 12.750 Pfund. Wir haben den ganzen Tag dort verbracht, Prospekte mitgenommen, Autos angeschaut, sind einfach herumgelaufen. Wie gesagt, ich erinnere mich nicht an viele Details, doch woran ich mich sehr genau erinnern kann, ist der weiße Martini Turbo am Porsche-Stand mit seiner klassischen Tracht in Rot, Weiß und Blau, den Streifen, den breit ausgestellten Radkästen und natürlich der Walflosse. An den Stand selbst kann ich mich nur vage erinnern. Inzwischen habe ich herausgefunden, dass dort auch ein 924er und ein SC ausgestellt waren. Somit war der Stand eher klein, doch für meine 10 Jahre alten Augen stach dieser Turbo mehr hervor als alles andere. Mehr noch als die Lamborghinis und Ferraris, mehr als alle anderen Fahrzeuge. Ich erinnere mich, wie mein Dad versuchte, mir das Sperrdifferenzial zu erklären, doch ich habe nie so richtig kapiert, wie das funktionieren sollte. Ja, ich hatte zwar dieses Poster mit der Explosionszeichnung, doch wusste ich nicht besonders viel über die Details dieses Wagens. Es war nicht so, dass ich technisches Wissen über die genaue Funktionsweise eines Turboladers gehabt hätte. Ich gehörte nicht zu den Kindern, die irgendwas auseinandernehmen, um vielleicht Spaß daran haben, einen Rasenmäher zu zerlegen, um ihn dann später wieder zusammenzubauen. Ich mochte nun mal das Aussehen des Turbo, ganz einfach. Die rot-weiß-blaue Lackierung hatte etwas. Der Spoiler befand sich für einen 10-Jährigen etwa auf Augenhöhe und ich bemerkte die kleine Aufschrift Turbo. In diesem Alter weiß man nicht, wieso man einen Wagen mag, es ist eher eine instinktive Reaktion. Ich sah das Auto und reagierte. Natürlich ist einem als Kind nicht bewusst, was solche Ereignisse bedeuten. Dieser Moment sollte mein Leben verändern. Ich verließ die Motorshow mit einem Prospekt von Porsche, einem kleinen gefalteten Marketingpamphlet, das vielleicht 6 Seiten umfasste. Wir fuhren zurück nach Sheffield und ein paar Wochen nach der Show entschloss ich mich, einen Brief an Porsche in Stuttgart zu schreiben, in dem ich ihnen mitteilte, dass ich Autos für sie designen würde, wenn ich älter wäre. Erstaunlicherweise erhielt ich eine Antwort. Das ist wirklich wahr. Und diese Antwort lautete sinngemäß, ruf uns an, wenn du älter bist. Leider habe ich diesen Brief nicht mehr, Dinge gehen eben verloren. Aber die Leidenschaft für Porsche, die war nun da und die ist geblieben. Ich ahnte nicht, dass die Fahrzeuge, mit denen man mich heute am ehesten in Verbindung bringt, nur einen kleinen Teil eines komplexen und packenden Abenteuers darstellen sollten, das auf mich wartete. Ein Leben, das die Stahlstadt Sheffield, den Großstadtdschungel von Los Angeles, den Rock'n'Roll der 80er, die intensive Modewelt, das chaotische Gesicht Hollywoods, einige zugegebenermaßen inspirierte Fahrten und bisher 1 Million verrückter Momente umfasst. Kurz und gut, den Kindheitstraum, einmal einen Porsche zu besitzen, habe ich niemals aufgegeben. Egal, wie abwegig er damals schien. Ich hatte einfach keine Ahnung, auf welche Reise ich mich dadurch begeben würde. Now the journey lasted about 30 years. When you had your first Porsche, it was in the beginning of the 90s. But the first question is, you write in your book, the letter from Porsche doesn't exist in your collection. You don't know if Porsche have some copy of this letter they sent you.
Yeah, it's kind of going to become my new quest to try and find this letter. I mean, the letter was a significant part of my life, and it's interesting. People are still writing letters today to Porsche, and I visited Porsche recently and saw in a publicist's desk there was a letter on the wall. It wasn't an email. It was a letter that someone had written to Porsche, and I said to this person, that letter, your reply back to that letter is probably going to change that person's life, because I wrote to Porsche 40 years ago. I'm now 50. So it certainly changed my life, and the story has come full circle. But briefly, for those that can understand my lack of German, I think just in essence, the story really in the book is about pursuing passion. It's about never giving up on the dream. It's about staying positive. And it's about how just one little thing can inspire a generation and also can inspire a future. And I think that is the message that comes across in the book from what I'm hearing, from what people have read. My story is no different to a lot of other people's. I had a dream. I never gave up on that dream. And the dream all started with a letter and a reply from Porsche over 40 years ago.
You told that when you was 10 years old, 1977, when you got in London, you got the letter from Porsche, and then 30 years nothing happened from Porsche. But there is a contact a few years ago, because today you are some ambassador for Porsche, without have a contract with them, without they do not pay for that what you are doing for the Porsche, for the trade. But a few years ago, there was another letter from Stuttgart. What happened then?
Well, essentially, fast forward 35 years, and in 2012, a short documentary independent film titled Urban Outlaw came out, essentially telling my story of this kid that grew up with the poster on the wall as a 10-year-old, and how I moved, left school at 15, not much education, moved to America, Los Angeles at 19, and never gave up on my dream of owning a Porsche, but that's only part of the story. The story really was one of passion, because I say passion is something that you can't manufacture and put in a bottle and sell, but passion is something that everyone has. I found my passion was essentially clothing design, and then got into the film business, and along the way, never gave up on my dream of owning a few Porsches. That was my vehicle of choice, my religion, my drug of choice, so to speak. And I never gave up on that dream. And I've been able to travel all over the world on the back of this film that came out. But I've realized that this is a very familiar story, which is universal regardless of language. People have a dream, and I never gave up on my dream. So the second letter from Porsche came 5 years ago after this film came out called Urban Outlaw, which was a short documentary film. And Porsche said, hey, we've seen the film. We realize you wrote to us when you were 10 years old, and we'd love to invite you to tour the factory. And that was 5 years ago. A couple of hours ago, earlier on this morning, I also visited Porsche Leipzig just down the road and toured that facility. And that was a kickoff to my German book tour. So, you know, my dreams are still evolving and still coming true. They came true today. It's the first time I've ever been at a book fair. So this is all new territory to me and very exciting to me. You have to remember I left school when I was 15 with hardly any education. So to actually have a book out that originally came out in England last June, did rather well there. It got in on the London Times top 10 bestseller list. It then got translated into German. So this is the debut of the German book tour. It will also be translated into Japanese later on this year, and with a bit of luck, translated into Spanish. But I think ultimately, and I always say we all speak Porsche, but I think ultimately what we all relate to and we all speak is passion and never giving up on the dream. And I think that is, if anything comes out of the book separate of the cars, I think the message there is stay motivated, stay dedicated, never give up on the dream, and give back. You know, I always try to share my knowledge. I always try to be positive and have time for other people, and that's what Porsche did for me, gave me time to express myself. And obviously, I'm not necessarily a typical Porsche-looking person. My affiliation's kind of a strange one, but it's unique in the sense that Porsche supports somewhat what I do, and I get to travel all over the world telling my story of the love for the Porsche brand and ultimately the drive. And the fact that Porsches are made within less than 5 miles of where we're sat right now, I think, is a common bond that most people can relate to. Whether you drive one or not, I think people share the passion for Porsche. Porsche is celebrating 70 years of its anniversary, and I'm just happy to be a small part of the brand in a small way. And I'm super happy to see all you guys here allowing me to share my story through the book and talk a little bit about what motivates me.
You talked that you're all over the world on the road to talk about your life, and just want to explain your popularity in Germany and in the fact of your visit in Hamburg last year. Also im vergangenen Jahr gab es einen spontanen Besuch von Magnus Walker in Hamburg, und da wurde innerhalb von 2 Tagen zu einer Art Flashmob aufgerufen, und es kamen an einem Sonntagmorgen um 6 Uhr mehr als 500 Autos in dem Hamburger Hafen zusammen, die einfach nur Magnus Walker kennenlernen wollten, und they want to meet you in the harbor in Hamburg last year in May.
Oh yeah, the fish market, yeah.
Yeah, a few cars were there. I just
A few cars, 500 people, some yeah. German police, but
were happy, the German police.
I guess
police.
Germans must like the beard or something.
Yeah. I think the German police was very upset about the look of the Porsche man, Magnus Walker, because in Germany, Porsche man looks different.
But you know, you can never judge the book by the cover. Pardon the pun, we are at a book fair, but you can never judge the book by the cover. It's what's within. Someone was saying to me earlier on today that it's cold outside. I said, but yeah, the soul and the passion inside, that's where the heat comes from. It comes from the heart and the soul. So I think that's the common bond that brings together all like-minded enthusiasts, whether it's Porsche people or book people, it doesn't really matter. I think it's a universal passion that brings people together.
Magnus Walker is the Urban Outlaw, is the title of the book also. It's the same in English. The English version, the German version is the same. When does it establish the name? Why came the decision to take Urban Outlaw for the description of Magnus Walker?
Well, like a lot of things in my life, it's all unplanned, nothing structured. I didn't plan on a book or a film. It just evolved. In essence, the name Urban Outlaw was a title given to an article in the British Porsche magazine, Total 911. They referred to me as an urban outlaw in the sense I live in an urban environment in downtown Los Angeles, California, in the good old US of A. And the type of cars that I'm building are referred to as outlaws because they're just a little bit outside of the norm. So that was a phrase that sounded good. I didn't come up with the term. It was a name that was given to an article, but I thought, wow, that's actually pretty cool. It sort of describes a little bit about what I'm about, but I actually call myself just Man with a Beard. People refer to me as the Urban Outlaw, but I'm a rock and roller. I have a passion for life, and I like Porsches. So that's the story in the book. I think these elements that people relate to separate of the car, and I think I describe myself as street smart as opposed to book smart. I call myself an adaptive swimmer in the sense that I came to America when I was 19. That was 32 years ago in 1986. And for me, I've been able to sort of pursue my passion and do three things that I have no educational background in. One was clothing design. I had a relatively successful rock and roll fashion company. Then we bought some property, got into the film location business, and along the way pursued my passion for collecting more Porsches than I thought I could ever own. But all those ingredients were basically unscripted. There was no master plan. There was just a dream. I always talk about the dream. I'm living the dream now and enjoying every moment of it. And I welcome any questions you guys may have sometime during this conversation about what I'm about.
We'll talk about the clothes brand you established. You have a lot of famous, popular clients in America, like actors and...
In essence, I'd always been a heavy metal guy. I grew up listening to heavy metal music in the late 70s, early 80s. You know, Iron Maiden, Def Leppard, Judas Priest, Scorpions, Black Sabbath, Metallica. And that was my thing, a headbanger. Went to see a lot of rock shows and... somehow ended up making rock and roll clothing about 25 years ago in L.A. And long story short, sort of outfitted everyone from Alice Cooper to Madonna and created our own sort of somewhat unique style of clothing that people related to. And in essence, it goes back to me just trying to do what I like to do myself, making myself happy. I always said I design what I personally like to wear, not so much following the trend, but accidentally creating a trend. And that has sort of continued into the Porsche world as well, of designing cars that are just a little bit different to what everyone else is doing, but unique and instantly recognizable as a 911 in their own sense. So I think in a sense, when you can sort of create a style that's your own and unique, that's one way of standing out. And essentially, I had some success with the clothing company that enabled me to buy some property in L.A. We accidentally got into the film location business. That was somewhat lucrative because L.A. is a movie town. So that enabled me to collect more Porsches than I ever dreamt I could own as a kid. So there's a connecting thread that weaves the fabric of my life together, and that thread really is just my own artistic style, not taking no for an answer and not necessarily listening to what other people said or advised me to do. I sort of went down my own path in life, and I think that served me pretty well because every day is a new challenge, just like being here at a book fair. I've done a lot of trade shows in the clothing business, but never done a book show. So in essence, it's new and exciting, but somewhat of a familiar environment, being in a convention center talking to people about passion.
Yeah. A very colorful life, I think. And the decision to go from Sheffield to Los Angeles was you go when you're 19 years old, and your parents didn't know that you won't come back. What did they say when you informed them Magnus will be in Los Angeles for the future? What did your mother and your father decide?
I didn't really know how long I was going to be there, but I knew in my heart that that was going to become my home. I describe LA as a land of opportunity. It enabled me to do the things I just described with no education. My parents did think I was coming back. I guess they were worried a little bit. This was, you know, back in the late 80s to me, LA was sex, drugs, rock and roll. There was no reason to go back to Sheffield, the north of England. The sun shined in L.A., beautiful people were there, the music was great, and it was just an idyllic lifestyle that I didn't really think about the future. You know, I lived day to day. I'm still somewhat the same way. That's sort of how I live my life. I travel on one-way tickets, not necessarily sure when I'm returning home. So I'm a little bit of a nomad rock and roll gypsy at heart, I suppose. But, you know, my parents, I thought initially, would think I was coming back. But once I'd been there 5 years, the clothing business was becoming pretty successful. I became what I call Hotel California. They came to visit me and supported my freedom and my success. And I think my story would never have evolved if I'd stayed in Sheffield. I don't think the opportunities would have been there for me to blossom and shine. So for me, the land of opportunity really was moving to an unfamiliar country, but a country that was welcoming and supportive of creativity and creative ideas. So anyone that's out there that has a kid that maybe doesn't fit the norm, a lot of times I was told, cut your hair and get a real job. Well, 35 years later, I've never cut my hair, and I don't think I have a real job. So there's elements of the book that talk about motivation, and I've always been a self-motivated person, and I think that's something which is relatable to people of all ages. You know, find something you love doing, never give up, do it to the best of your ability, and stay true to that vision. Perhaps the hardest thing is finding something that you're passionate about, but a little bit of support does go a long way.
You just explained that you sold your fashion label a few years ago. It was a very economical, successful company. What is Magnus Walker doing today, otherwise to collect some Porsche cars? How big is the collection of
people? People ask me this all the time. The answer is I own a few cars.
Okay.
Porsche for me is a hobby. It's not a business. My day job is I'm the film location business. By that, I mean I own industrial buildings in Los Angeles that I rent out for commercial filming, everything from TV shows to music videos to film to movies to still shoot. So Porsche is a hobby that admittedly got out of control. It's enabled me to travel all over the world. But to this day, the moment is make the most out of every moment, try and make those memories memorable, and see where the road takes me on the next chapter. I've just turned 50 last year, which is kind of a milestone. The book, in essence, is the second chapter of my life, reprioritizing, looking back on the first 50 years, how I got to the point where I'm at, unscripted, and still swimming around in what I call uncharted waters. So that's great about life is, for me, not really knowing what's coming next. Every day is a new hurdle, a new opportunity. Maybe I have to learn more German. I always joke about Sprechen Sie Porsche. Maybe Sprechen Sie Deutsch would be something which would be beneficial. But
we will do it the next day when we make a book promotion tour. After tomorrow you are in Bielefeld. We have more than 4 hours in the car, so I will give you some German lessons.
Okay, self-help German.
More than, at which point have you decided to write about your life? You just talk about the first 50 years with a lot of things you did. Other people need three lives for that. At which point you have decided to make a book?
Well, like everything, I'll repeat myself. The book happened organically. It wasn't scripted. It wasn't planned. I had a friend who's in a band who owned one of my cars in England. The band's called The Prodigy. For those that know, they're a pretty successful dance rave techno band. My buddy Liam's in that band. And a friend of his, Martin Roach, wrote a book on The Prodigy 20 years ago. 2 years ago, my buddy Liam says, hey, I have a writer that thinks you may have a book in you. I said, okay, well, let me meet this guy. Happened to be in London. I met Martin Roach, who's a ghostwriter. He's written over 150 books globally. Half of them are on music, so it's everything from The Prodigy to his latest sort of big book is on One Direction, the boy band. In the car world, he's wrote everything from supercar books to Bentley to the latest book that he wrote prior to mine was called Nigel Mansell, Staying on Track, which happened to make it into the top 10 all-time sporting books in the UK. So my book was a follow-up to Nigel Mansell's book. I met Martin in London. We hit it off. He's an old punk rock guy, well, similar age to me. We just had a relatability, and Martin's a great storyteller. He came to visit me one Christmas in Sheffield probably 18 months ago. I showed him everywhere where I grew up, where I went to school, the houses I lived in. And then he came to visit me in LA, and we spent a week together writing the book, working on the book. I didn't actually write. I just talked and talked and talked. And then Martin went back to England with like 20 hours of audio conversation and started dissecting and digesting everything we'd spoken about to the point where his wife said he started sounding like me. And then 4 months later, he sent me a first draft of the book. I literally changed, I think, three things, just phrases. sort of like I said, I didn't say it that way. And that was it. I never read the final draft of the book because there were no changes needed. The book came out last June, like I said earlier on, in English. And that was the story of the book. So it happened organically. It's one of the pivotal points in the past 5 years for me. The film Urban Outlaw was the first point. The second thing that I did was a TED Talk in 2014. I don't know if you guys are familiar with TED Talks. Anyone know what a TED Talk is? If you do, put your hand up if you know what a TED Talk is. Okay, so we have one person that knows what a, two people know what a TED Talk is. So my, if you take anything with you from what I'm rambling about, when you go home, Google TED Talks and just punch in Magnus Walker TED Talk. The TED Talk I did has been viewed over 6 million times, and I had no idea what a TED Talk was. In essence, it's sort of a motivational speak lecture that happens globally, and it's everything from guys like me to guys like Elon Musk and you know, guys from Microsoft like Bill Gates. So that was an opportunity for me to do something completely different, because remember, I left school at 15 with no O-levels, and then I got invited to do essentially a story of my life talk, somewhat of a motivational speak, and then the book came 2 years after that. So none of my journey was planned. So I think if there is a moral to my story is, for some people, an example is myself, life doesn't need to be planned out ahead of you. It evolves one day at a time, and it's just a matter of staying positive and saying yes more than I say no to things that make sense. Opportunities that might be a little scary, like writing a book, is essentially burying your soul or burying my soul. And if you get a copy of the book and read it, there's not too much that I didn't put in the book. It's sort of raw in places and emotional in places, but it's my journey. I think it was just a matter of time to share that story. I always say timing is everything. The book came at a real strange part of my life, where some parts of it were the best parts of my life ever and some parts of it were the worst part ever, but that's what life's about. And I'm just excited that people seem to be responding to the book, because I think my relatability to most people is I'm no different to anyone else. I didn't grow up privileged, grew up working class, and you can sort of fill the pieces into the story. But like I say, the thread is staying positive and taking opportunities when they come my way that makes sense.
Thank you very much for the exciting view of your very, very exciting journey. I don't want to translate the sentence that you finished school with 15 without have some possibility to go to high school, because he has some children they learned about. Thank you very much, Magnus Walker, to be here.
Thank you very much.
Danke, dass Sie hier sind. Er signiert jetzt noch sein Buch dort, oder wenn Sie Fragen haben an Magnus Walker, herzlich gerne. Danke für Ihre Aufmerksamkeit, Magnus. Have a nice Sunday.
Thank you very much, everyone that's here to listen to my story. I hope you understood some of what I was talking about, and enjoy the rest of your day at the Leipzig Book Fair.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Thank you very much.
Danke fürs Zuhören. Wir sehen uns auf der nächsten Leipziger Buchmesse.